First things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. May I just pause for 1 second to wish my daughter Harper a very happy birthday. 5 years ago today, I was in labor.
Happy birthday, Harper. That's wonderful.
Yes, really excited. Have a great day, little one. I will see you soon. She's watching. She likes to say your names. She calls out the names when the show starts, and then she goes
off to
do something else. A lot of quarterback news to discuss this morning. We're going to dive into all of it. Is Teddy Bridgewater on the trade market? Lamar Jackson has come back down to earth, and after last night, it appears Andrew Luck still has a ways to go. That's where we begin this morning, and let's just say it is a darn good thing preseason doesn't count. Otherwise, we'd be singing a very different tune regarding Andrew Luck today. In his first home game in nearly 600 days, Luck wasn't so lucky. Had a hard time finding any sort of rhythm on offense, completed 6 of his 13 passes for only 50 yards, tough couple of sacks, and he did have a pick. He had that interception. Despite all of that, though, Luck still managed to be upbeat after the game.
I'm very, very encouraged, both one, by how I feel. I feel great, which is, it makes me happy. But then, and two, the attitude of the guys and then going out and playing football. I told someone after the game, I was like, man, I'm sort of happy to have been sacked by, you know, Suggs and a legit, like, you know, sack. I was like, oh, I landed on my right elbow. It's sort of reminiscent of how I injured my shoulder a couple years ago. And I didn't feel anything. Didn't give it a second thought. So, I think that's actually a big deal for me, you know, and being able to sort of lose that thought bubble, if you will, that thought cycle.
Andrew Luck might have been the only one encouraged when he got sacked by Suggs on that tough shoulder there. CeCe, where does Andrew Luck's comeback stand after 2 preseason games now?
Well, I was very encouraged because I know how tough the game is. I know how tough the league is. I know how tough it is to play quarterback. So if Andrew Luck hadn't been injured and he had played the way that he played last night or the previous week in preseason game number 1, I wouldn't be concerned at all. There's so many things about football that you only get better as far as practicing. I thought it was good that he was able to go against a defense in Baltimore that's going to be pretty good. I think they're returning 11 starters on their defense. They did not, after the intel from the defensive coordinator, they didn't go into this game, Baltimore, as a regular preseason game. They were going to blitz a lot. They were going to play a number of different coverages compared to other. So this test for me, for Luck, I thought was a good one. There's a couple things. One, he mentioned the sack by T. Suggs, and it was good because he gave us insight in on a lot of athletes feel, but they don't tell us the truth. Hey, you're coming back from injury. Are you concerned? No, not at all. Don't think about it. No, Luck told us the truth. We all think about it, and it was nice that he was able to because it was a sack very, very similar to something he got hurt on before. And that's typically where you land on the elbow, the defender's holding your arm down, and then your shoulder subluxes or comes up. So he felt very, very good after that. So getting through that, that's a huge hurdle for a returning athlete. I also saw in the red zone where he tried to force the ball in on third down. That you can't simulate because in practice, the coaches will blow the whistle and be like, oh, he's out of the pocket. We're not going to put him in arm's way. But in the game, he was able to simulate, hey, there's a linebacker right there. Let me try to thread this needle. And the guy was like, no, this is NFL game speed. Let me show you. So the ability to be able to go at full speed, which he did have a failure and throw an interception, I'm fine with that. But getting sacked by Suggs and falling exactly the same way he was hurt a couple years ago, I think is monumental. So I thought it was encouraging. This game is tough. It's tough to play quarterback in the NFL, so I still like what I see as far as him being at the podium, still being enthusiastic, still having that rare smile that we see from quarterbacks after the game.
Listen, the sack by Terrell Suggs on that play, I'm not going to hold that one against him because he also said we didn't play the clip, but that's a deep shot, slow developing play. It's 3rd and 7. You are going to need time for that play to work. He tried to roll out a little bit, and this is why, I mean, Terrell Suggs, as they said in the broadcast, he has 125 career sacks for a reason. The Colts also were without their starting left tackle. Mm-hmm. I think it was Jack Doyle tried to chip Terrell Suggs but did not do a great job of it. He comes around. The play, and everyone's focused on that and the interception. I agree with you also that what he said, it is encouraging. He can fall on his throwing shoulder that way and feel fine about it. But what was my biggest concern with Andrew Luck coming back? How much has he learned from being the most pressured quarterback over his first 3 years, being the most hit quarterback in the pocket over his first 3 years, about getting the ball out quickly? And his final play, and I think we were able to put a clock on it, the last play he took, I mean, league average is 2.7 seconds to get the ball out. I mean, he's at 4 by the time he's touched. Now, that's not a play people are focused on because he's not thrown to the ground. He's not injured on it. It's just he's in the grasp. But they pointed it out good from the other angle on the broadcast. He had his running back coming up open in the flat. You can kind of see it there. He had another option. That's the type of thing that Andrew Luck has to avoid. That's the play that was more concerning to me than the Terrell Suggs play, which is going to happen. He had ample opportunity to get rid of the football there and did not do it.
Is that rust, CeCe? Is that just getting the feel of the game back to you, or is that just a fundamental flaw?
I mean, we see
game?
Guys play that way that have played without an injury. So we can make an excuse and say it's rust. It's part of playing the game. In that situation there that Nick talks about, too, it's third down a little bit longer. He's trying to – because everyone in football is like, get the ball out of your hand. Get the ball out of your hand. Get the ball out of your hand. But also, there's a certain play call that there might not be someone open. All right? There's offensive linemen that have to do their job. This blitz, they had a blitz right here. It was a zone dog where they brought three guys and they dropped one guy off of his left. So he was trying to make sure that he knew where he was going. And if he does throw to the running back, he's got to throw right over a 6'5 guy's head. So we just can't be too consumed with get the ball out of your hand, protect yourself, if there ain't nobody open, because other people have things to do. So we have to be careful in get the ball out of your hand and trying to run the offense. It's third down. You have to hold the ball sometimes a little bit for guys to be able to get down the field. I think when he runs with the football out of the pocket is more of a true measure of has he learned his lesson from what's happened to him in the past.
Did you see anything, besides staying healthy, taking the sack by Suggs, did you see anything encouraging in the way he's throwing the ball and his velocity and anything in any other part of his game?
Chris can speak to the throwing motion better than I can, but you talked about going into the first preseason game that's something you were going to watch, that and then after the first preseason game you thought it was the same motion that we'd seen from Luck for at Stanford his first year up until the injury. It to my eye it looked similar as well.
Did you want to see more plays downfield? Did you want to see him open?
Listen,
if you want to see more plays down the field, they need to upgrade their personnel.
Well, that's what I was going to say to Andrew.
So, I mean, we're going to sit here and critique Andrew Luck to death. All this and this and this and this. He don't have great wide receivers.
And T.Y. Hilton didn't play yesterday. Right. And so that's part of it as well. But my other big takeaway from yesterday's game is I've been saying there's two divisions in the AFC that you can almost flip a four-headed coin to say who's going to win it. The AFC West, I still feel that way. The AFC South, I do not feel that way anymore. That is, to me, I've seen enough from Indianapolis to know even if Luck is peak Andrew Luck, that's a three-team race. This is a team that has a lack of talent on defense, has once again a lack of talent at running back. T.Y. Hilton's a good player, but if your passing attack all of a sudden looks like that when T.Y. Hilton's gone, like, you don't have enough weapons offensively. They lost Dante Moncrief this offseason, who shouldn't be a huge loss but appears to be a huge loss. Like, that, I look at the Colts and say they've got a ways to go. Even if Luck's going to play better than he did yesterday. Yesterday was a poor game from him on a lot of levels, even if it's encouraging because he could take the hit because he's getting the experience. But that is a team that what you pointed out on that, the play that I highlighted that is interesting is you said it was a zone dog. But that's a three-man rush that got to him. That's a three-man rush that got to him. Like, that's an indictment on guys in addition to Andrew Luck holding onto the ball. You have two-on-one for two of the guys rushing, and the guy right up the middle got to him. I mean, just beat a guy clean. So they have some personnel issues that Luck can't control.
All right, we'll take a break there. Coming up, should we be encouraged or discouraged by Lamar Jackson's performance last night against Andrew Luck? That's next on First Things First. All right, last we had this awesome throw from Joe Flacco to his new teammate, John Smokey Brown. Look at the concentration in the toe tap there.
It's a heck of a catch to get both feet down after the bobble.
Good catch by John Brown. John Brown, they need him to come up with some big plays. Coming over from Arizona Cardinals, they need a lift from the wide receiving core. They're looking to get it from JB. Great catch here in the back of the end zone. Flacco put it where only his guy could catch.
And he's more known for his speed. At least he was in Arizona.
Yes, if he can develop into a slot receiver, it'd be a huge help for them.
All right, let's keep it right there. Baltimore rookie Lamar Jackson with a tough game, competing for that starting quarterback job. He did throw a touchdown pass, but that was his lone highlight of the night. Finished with just 49 yards on 15 passes. Joe Flacco played three series, completed seven of his nine passes for 72 yards and a touchdown. You know what we have here, don't you? A conversation about the quarterback situation in Baltimore. CC, let's start with you. What was your impression of Lamar Jackson last night?
Well, I mean, if we're going to be fair to Lamar, we have to understand he's going to struggle in the NFL, especially just pure straight drop back and just reading the coverage when he recognizes which guy is going to be open and throwing the ball down the field. He looked like the quarterback that we thought from Louisville that he would look in the NFL. He's adjusting. He's adjusting to the speed of the game. But what I might be a little more concerned about is how much he watches the rush compared to watching the routes down the field. He is ready to bail out before he should be. So for me, I'd like to see him step up into the pocket and be able to wait for those receivers down the field. So anytime he gets any type of pressure, either flush from his left or to his right, you can see that he's ready to get out of the pocket. I think those things will come. And talking to Ozzie Newsome, he's a kid, when he does make mistakes, that he corrects those mistakes. He's very, very hard on himself. So Baltimore is satisfied with what they've seen. This is their third preseason game because they played in the Hall of Fame game. So he's gotten a lot of reps, but he is going to need those. Joe Flacco is the starter. If Baltimore, if they're trying to win games, Joe Flacco should be in there. Lamar is only a change of pace right now, and I'm not surprised that he has struggled maybe more so than the other quarterbacks taken in the first right. round, because from passing the football, he's got probably the longest way to go of all the quarterbacks that were drafted.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that he's got the longest way to go as far as being able to guy that can drop back and pass the ball 25 times a game, much less 30, 35 times a game. He's in an odd spot, because if you would have asked me after the draft, who's the quarterback of the five quarterbacks taken most likely to play in some capacity in week one, I would have picked Lamar Jackson. But if you would have asked me who's the quarterback least likely of the five quarterbacks taken to start at quarterback in week one, I would have said Lamar Jackson. The encouraging part of yesterday was he had as poor of a start as you can have. He was 0-for-4. He was missing guys badly. There was one third down where I understand the receiver didn't run the greatest route. At least that's what they said in the broadcast. Didn't run the greatest route. Didn't appear he'd run the greatest route. But he had him wide open in a soft part of the zone and just threw a bad ball. He was as bad as you can be his first three series. And then he finished the game after that 7 of 11. And the play he made, see, I know you're talking about bailing out while in the pocket on the rush. What I thought was interesting about the touchdown pass was it was a 3rd and 2 around the 10-yard line. He had the corner. He had already bailed out. He was rolling to his right. But he had the corner where he could have run for it, picked up the set of downs. Instead, he went to his third read and got the guy for a touchdown. In the moment, I thought he was going to run for it. He actually ended up throwing for it. If he would have run for it, it wasn't going to be a touchdown. It would have been a first down, but not a touchdown. That was encouraging, but it's going to be a lot of, oh, that's nice, mixed in with a lot of, okay, he is very raw throwing the football, and he's going to bail out more than the other guys because he's the best athlete of any of them. So he has more reason to believe that, okay, if I do bail out, it can still be a positive play, but we know long-term that's a good way to get hurt, and we haven't seen guys who do that repeatedly be high-level successful NFL guys.
So that's interesting, this idea of pocket discipline as being one of the things he really has to focus in on. CeCe, how hard is that to teach a young guy? Because I guess your instinct when you are as athletic as he is to want to bail and run. But how hard is it to teach a guy to stay in the pocket?
It's very hard to teach young quarterbacks who are very athletic, because at every level, they've been able to escape the pressure. The guys least likely to be able to tackle them in space are the guys on the defensive line. But once you get to the NFL, you think those guys can't get to you till you get all those reps and you realize they can get to you. Even on the touchdown pass, Nick, in his eyes, he might have thought he could have got to the corner, but he was going to take a big hit in trying to get there. He made the right decision by pulling up. That's the reason why they had a little soft roll on third down to try to move the pocket so he can get a better throwing lane. What I get concerned about him bailing in the pocket and not having discipline is because I wonder if he can see. Because I know guys who are challenged from a height standpoint, there are blind spots in that pocket. So I believe that Lamar, I know based on talking to other quarterbacks that are his height, they can't see. So if he keeps bailing out, when will he ever be able to trust his feel, trust the route combinations, and be able to throw into those dark spots? Because that's what Russell did. He did it early. That's what Drew Brees did. That's what he, and they did
and
that
And that's trusting
early.
Your guys and trusting
You have
routes.
To be able to trust the integrity of the pocket. That's what they call it. You have to know your left tackle is going to brush the guy past you. Your right tackle is going to stay a little more engaged. Guys on the line of scrimmage are going to either know you can get help from your center, double team, and one of the defensive tackles. Those are things that you will gradually understand and get a feel for and won't be in a rush. Because if you are going to leave the pocket, I prefer for him to leave in the middle of the pocket so he can have his eyes down the field compared to spinning, taking his eyes off the wide receivers, because then you can't throw the ball when your head's down.
We saw Baker in his first preseason game do this at a much higher level than I would have expected any rookie quarterback to do, which is even when he was leaving the pocket, he wasn't leaving to run, and he was keeping his eyes upfield, and it's how he was able to make the big, if people remember it, third and I think 17 play on the sideline to Antonio Callaway, then it being challenged. Like, these are things that the Lamar has not yet developed, and if we're going to be totally fair, some people have questioned if he'll ever develop it. It's one of the reasons why people were saying, should he change position? Because even at the NFL level, he's still a dynamic athlete. Even by NFL standards and big, strong, fat, he is still a dynamic, quick-twitch athlete. He said one thing really interesting after the game that I wanted to get your take on, which is he said he thought one of the reasons he had the slow start was he didn't take advantage of the time when Flacco was in there to keep his shoulder loose. Like, and I read it, and I was like, that's an interesting thing to say. And I thought about it, like, how many games in Lamar's life has he not been the starter? You know what I mean? Has he been on the bench at the start when someone else was out there? And he said he now knows for the next preseason game that while Flacco's out there, to be staying loose like it's pregame.
Lamar, watch Tom Brady. Watch Tom Brady in the game where he knows he's not going to take a break. Watch how many throws he throws in between series when they're getting ready to go back out there. He's throwing the ball. That's what the veterans do. It's a lot of little things that people have to learn in trying to perfect their craft and being a professional. And it seems very, very simple, but I think that last night he understood that better when he went in there. And not rusty, but he wasn't ready to throw his fastball on that first play.
All right, quickly, we saw a pretty good Lamar Jackson in that second game. We saw shaky Lamar Jackson, some would say, at least to start out last night. Who would you say is sort of the real Lamar Jackson or closer to the athlete we're going to see?
Oh, I think right now, I think what we are seeing is exactly who he is. A guy who, if he were to be an NFL starter today, would complete right around 50% of his passes, would make a few dynamic plays, and would look way over his skis. Like, you said this in the beginning, another quarterback, not controversy, but a quarterback competition. This isn't a quarterback competition at the moment. Like, now, a year from now, it could be Joe Flacco when they can move on from the contract, and they showed Joe Flacco, since signing the contract, last in the NFL in yards per attempt, last in the NFL in a lot of categories. They have reason to want to move on from Flacco, but right now, Lamar is that totally unmolded piece of clay we've talked about. He's going to show flashes, but he's not close to there.
Yeah, he's ready to play 10 or 15 snaps. It's going to be hard for him to develop, too, because they're going to ask him to be running around. He's not going to be coming in, subbing for Flacco, or being a wildcat where Flacco's on the field, and they're just going to have him drop straight back and throw the ball. So he's going to be doing things that necessarily don't lead to developing discipline in the pocket.
All right, we've got to take a break there. Coming up, is Teddy Bridgewater about to be traded? Next, this is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Always a good time when former head coach Eric Mangini joins the program.
That is a gorgeous suit, Coach.
Thank you.
It's gorgeous. Just, it glows.
Why you got to piggyback on my statement? Week. Just let it sit.
No, there. It happens to be a gorgeous, it's shimmering.
Oh,
and
yeah, you were going to say that if I didn't. Mm-hmm, Jenna.
Not what I was going to say.
Nice dress, Jenna.
Thank you so much. Coach, as you tell me all the time, 37 is the new 27. I never knew what you meant, and now I do. Eli Manning just turned 37. Feels as encouraged as ever, coming off a disastrous last season. As a result, the Giants were gifted the second overall pick. They chose running back Saquon Barkley. Some said they should have drafted Eli's replacement there. Eli says he wants to prove the Giants did not make a mistake.
The whole Giants, the organization, Coach Shermer, everybody, and how they handled the offseason, and saying they had faith and confidence in me and wanted me to be their quarterback. I didn't know what was going to happen this year, so I feel like, hey, I've got a second chance, and I want to prove them right, prove that they made the right decision and sticking with me and that I can play at a high level and win a lot of football games for the Giants.
All right, Coach, shy of wins, how does he do that? How does Eli Manning go out there? What is the key for him to be really, really successful this year?
Well, I think they made the right decision as well, and I do believe in Eli Manning. We talk all the time about quarterbacks who have no Super Bowl wins, and Eli's gotten two, but Eli gets pushed in the back of all those conversations, and he's got two against New England Patriots, which, you know, isn't the easiest thing in the world to do. He's much more prepared this season for success than he was last season. They had a lot of things go really wrong in New York. Now they've improved the left side of that offensive line substantially through free agency, mm-hmm. through the draft. They've got a legitimate running game. You've got receivers that can create some problems. Odell looks like he's in the right mindset. This offense has a chance, I think, to be very good. And it's going to be also interesting to see the effect that Pat Schumer has on the offense as well. So I imagine this will be a really good year for Eli.
So the guy that they could have drafted his replacement with, that pick, that's the guy that's the key to me for Eli this year, Saquon Barkley. Because you guys, both of you, and Chris and I were talking about this before the show, talk about the numbers game a lot when we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, for example. That Dak's going to be facing a lot of eight-man fronts, which means he's going to have man-to-man coverage with his receivers. Can those guys beat it? You can't, unless I don't have the numbers quite right. I don't know how you can play an eight-man front if Odell Beckham's on the field. Unless you're fine with single covering Odell. Or you could, Chris, you were trying to describe the way you could theoretically double Odell, but only if you have a double tight end, single
back. You play
a
4-3 and you play cover 2.
No, I'm saying with an eight-man front.
Yes.
Doubling Odell with an eight-man front is almost impossible. They could try on a certain downs, but very difficult. So if you're going to have to double Odell throughout the season, if Saquon can be the guy that a lot of people believe he is, which is a guy who, in a typical offense, would demand an eight-man front against him, well, now all of a sudden it's pick your poison with the Giants, and that sets Eli up to succeed. Because if the teams are really focused on slowing down Odell and really focused at when they can on slowing down Saquon, you still have a guy that I think, Evan Engram, they spent a first-round pick on him, is poised to have a big season. I like Sterling Shepard on the other side. Like, you have other guys that can still make plays, and they are going to have no attention paid to them. But I think it starts with Saquon, that Saquon instantly is the guy that we've seen these top five running backs be, where whether it's Gurley or Zeke, guys that the moment they step on the field as pros, they're like, oh, that's one of the best running backs in the league, and you have to account for him defensively. That's what I think can help Eli more than anything this year.
Yeah, I think Saquon is a dynamic player, but running backs don't necessarily force you into a 7 or 8 man box. It's the offensive line. That's the reason why, because you get so many holes, they're getting to the second level, and you feel, coach feels, I got to put an extra guy in the box. So as we talk about Barkley, yeah, he's important, but let's look at Todd Gurley's rookie year. Sensational. What about his sophomore season?
Not good.
Offensive line wasn't good. Then they went out and got Whitworth from Cincinnati. He solidified their offensive line, and then he's back on MVP candidate. So you can't talk about Barkley without talking about that offensive line. And the offensive line concentration should be from the center to the right guard and to that right tackle. They got problems there. And until they solidify that, you know, as far as Pat Shermer, are they going to be able to be physical on that side to be able to create that 7-man box? Like, that's what they're going to have to do. But that offensive line, that they will determine if that pick was the right pick. And can they come off the ball and be physical?
Can you just talk a little bit about Eli Manning's trajectory a little bit? Was last year sort of an outlier year because of everything that went wrong? Or do we generally see quarterbacks that have a bad year turn around at this age and have a great year again? I mean, how do you game plan what, you know, how he's going to be?
Well, Chris brought up the right side of the line, and that still needs some improvement. But there are so many holes in that on that offense last year that they've addressed a lot of them. Getting Odell back, and he can be the player that he hopes he can be and the Giants hope they can be. Getting a legitimate running back, being able to fix the left side of the offensive line, having a tight end that can affect the middle of the field. They've fixed a lot of those holes. They haven't fixed all of them. There were so many issues. It was hard to really address one. And
yeah, you plug one, water shooting up over here.
Yeah, and it just becomes a situation
it
where
was
you're,
an odd
you're managing
season.
It.
So it's not as if we're trying to determine where Eli is going to be after that season. It's what were we thinking about Eli Manning maybe before last season if the Giants had been healthy. Any team that we see have that year with the types of injuries they're going to have, it's not old age. It's a matter of it's go time for Eli. We know he's won two Super Bowls, but right now the franchise, they need him to play at a level that he hadn't played at the last couple years.
Well, let's also add in the fact that the defense wasn't very good. The defense, they spent a ton of money on. They expected a lot of really good things from it, but the Giants were behind in a bunch of games. So not only do you have problems, but now you're limited in what you can do because you're chasing points. So it's not even like you can maintain the balance between run and pass. That was taken away in addition. So all those things combined really put them in a difficult spot. I would imagine you're going to get a much more realistic picture of where Eli is in his career this year than what we saw last year.
I think we will as well. And no one can take away the two Super Bowls, and he might already have a minted gold jacket. I get all of that. But none of that helps him this season. And we are, Coach, you're the one who taught me this. For these top-flight quarterbacks, you don't get to have everything perfect. He's got one of the best wide receivers in football. He's got, I think, going to be one of the best running backs in football. Got a first-round pick at tight end. Got a high draft pick at the other wide receiver position. Got the highest-paid left tackle in the league. Got a second-round pick at left guard. Like, okay, the right side of your offensive line has problems for this season. Nobody's got the perfect offense. If this offense isn't dynamic, unless Saquon is not at all the guy we think he is, or they have the spate of injuries again, it's going to be on number 10. That doesn't change what he did against the Patriots in those two Super Bowls, but I think that's fair. Like, we've talked a lot about quarterbacks that are these top guys, but they need this, they need that. Eli's got nearly all of it. Like, they gave him the left tackle this year. They drafted the running back instead of fortifying the defense, trading back in the draft, drafting his replacement. Odell's back. I don't know of many quarterbacks in a better position to succeed going into a season than Eli Manning is.
Well, you also have to look at the fact that it is a new offensive system, and he is working with a new philosophy and a new head coach. So there is going to be part of this, especially early in the season, where they're figuring out each other and they're trying to understand what makes the other part work and what makes it work really well. So I would imagine early on there may be a few bumps, but you're right. He's gotten a lot of really positive things that he didn't have last year, and that's why I agree with you that we're going to get a picture of who Eli is at this point in his career with this group offensively.
I think Eli is going to have like the comeback player of the year type season.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Odell's going to get him 1,400 yards. That's going to get everything started. They're going to be able to run the football. Like, the Giants should be back.
I like Evan Engram, too. I think he's going to do a really good job.
That's one of these guys, too.
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to have a breakout season. Yeah, oh, okay.
Scratch him off because I like him. That's
off my fantasy team.
Coach, stick around. Coming up, are the Cowboys setting up Dak Prescott to fail? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to football now, Doug Peterson had some interesting things to say about another team. In his new book, Peterson was critical of the Jaguars' lack of aggressiveness in the AFC title game. When the Jags knelt before halftime, Peterson said, quote, if they lose this game, this is why. Nick, is Peterson out of bounds here?
I don't think he's out of bounds because I appreciate the honesty. It's his book. He can say what he wants. I think it's odd for a coach to criticize another coach's coaching decisions that shortly after it happened when they're both going to have to go up against each other. But I don't blame him for it. I will say this. In real time, I didn't think they were making a mistake. I didn't trust Blake Bortles either. I thought the Jags were in great position going into halftime against the Patriots. They just couldn't close the game.
Yeah, I love Doug because that's the way he was coaching his team. Every season is different. Every team is different. He had to have that approach, and we saw that when he let Nick Foles throw the ball and throw it off in the NFC Championship, and we saw that in the Super Bowl. That's why they won, because they were aggressive throwing the football. So I like it because he followed it up.
All right, Adrian Peterson signed with Washington this week and had some interesting comments For his naysayers, Peterson said his doubters, quote, don't really know anything about football. What do you think about that, CeCe?
No, you don't have to know an awful lot about football to realize a running back in his 30s is not going to have a long shelf life. So, Adrian, some of the things that football players think, oh, man, they didn't play, they don't know. We do know about the athletic body. And you are not the guy you were 5 years ago. I believe it would be challenged to be 700-yard rusher this season. I just hope that he's able to stay healthy. He's had a great career. I hope that he's able to have the type of year he would be satisfied with.
Listen, I think 500 yards would be an impressive year from him. He only needs 40 to move into the all-time top 10 rushing
mark. And that's huge.
And to pass Jim Brown, that'd be great. I understand this mentality, though. This is the mentality that made him the best running back in football the first day he stepped on the field, the best running back in football 6 months after blowing his ACL. That mentality has gotten him here. Eventually, though, the doubters are proven right on a long enough time frame.
All right, ending with the Steelers now. Ben Roethlisberger is set to make his preseason debut Saturday against the Titans. Big Ben says his arm feels stronger than it ever has. CeCe, what do you make of Roethlisberger's confidence entering year 15?
Well, I'll play five more years. I'm in the best shape of my life, and my arm is a certifiable rocket these days.
I think I told you guys that this is what good and great players do when they want to send the message to the organization or to teammates that, you know something, I plan on being around. Or if they are concerned about a contract, the only way that you can justify that is, hey, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to play. I'm feeling pretty good. Hey, you know something? I came in here this work this morning, and I feel stronger than ever.
Yeah.
Like, yes, but can Ben be consistent? Last year, after a bad game, a reporter asked him a question, maybe just flip comment. Well, maybe I should quit the game. Maybe I should give up. A couple off seasons ago, don't know how long, much more longer I can play this game. I'm banged up. Just be consistent, Ben, with your message. He's one of the best quarterbacks that we have seen play in the NFL. He can play a long time.
Absolutely.
He's a freakish athlete. He is built like the old throwback quarterbacks, and he has kind of maintained or lack of maintained the fitness level a lot like the old throwback quarterbacks did.
The thing you mentioned about the contract, I do think is noteworthy. He's got 2 years left on his deal. He's the 12th highest paid quarterback in football this year. Next year, he's scheduled to be the 12th highest paid quarterback. Typically, you don't make franchise quarterbacks play out the final year of their deal like Drew Brees has, but typically that doesn't happen. It's hard, though, for his agent to go to Pittsburgh and say, give Ben a contract extension when he is saying, I don't know how much longer I'm going to play. He's now saying, best shape, best arm, five more years. Now his agent's in a better position midway through the season to go to Pittsburgh and say, hey, let's start working on a contract extension, a little more money. So I think that has part to do with this as well.
36-year-old Ben Roethlisberger wants to play 25 more years of football. Moving on to college football now. The preseason AP poll is out, and for the third straight season, Alabama comes into the year ranked number one. Nick Saban is looking for his second straight title and sixth since coming to Tuscaloosa. And to break it down this season, we've got our guy, Fox College analyst Joel Klatt. Hey, Joel, it's great to have you on the show again.
It's good to be here. How are you guys this morning?
We are good.
We're
getting
great.
Excited. Weather's changing. College football's back in the conversation. Let us start right there with Alabama, who was named number one in the AP poll for the third straight year, as we discussed. All right, Joel, who is the best chance of dethroning Alabama?
It's a great question because not many have been able to step up to that plate and actually do what you just asked, which is dethrone Alabama. You know, at some point during every season dating back to 2008, they have been number one in the AP poll. They're going to start there this year. They start there for the third straight year, like you just mentioned. This program is on a different level right now. We've never seen this in the history of college football, the level of dominance that Nick Saban and Alabama are showing. He's 66-4 at home in Tuscaloosa since 2008 with five national titles, which means that in 10 seasons of football, he's got more national championships than he does home losses. It's incredibly difficult to dethrone this team. The Tide are phenomenal. They're the elite program in the country. If there were a couple that I was looking at this year, it would be Clemson and Ohio State for very different but specific reasons. Clemson, because their talent level is at or near what Alabama's is, and they're going to have maybe the best defensive front that we've seen in college football history with four guys that will likely get selected in the top two rounds in the NFL draft, maybe three all the way up into the first round. And then for Ohio State, I actually think Ohio State's going to look much more similar to what they were in 2014 with a vertical passing threat, Dwayne Haskins as their quarterback, and a great running game really with J.K. Dobbins as the lead back there. So those are the two teams that I'm looking at that could possibly have the talent and the blueprint to go out there and beat Alabama.
Joel, there's probably five maybe quarterback controversies or five quarterback battles of the teams in the top 10. Let's go back to Alabama. How do they resolve that quarterback controversy that they have there? Because I would say that's the most explosive one in college football.
Yeah, I've got a couple of guys that I know that are Alabama boosters, and they're actually able to go to practice, and they're sworn to secrecy, but I got them to talk a little bit. Tua is going to be the starter. I fully expect him to be the starter. This is the type of kid that gives them their best chance to win. He throws the football extraordinarily well, which we saw in the national championship game. But I do think Jalen Hurts is going to play this year. See, in this day and age, it's so rare for a guy to go out there and not get hurt. So whether it's play or injury, I think both guys are going to have to play in big moments. Now, it needs to be noted that Jalen Hurts is the safer choice. Remember, Nick Saban does not want his quarterback out there taking chances. And last year in the national championship game in the second half, Saban was forced to play Tua. So he had to live with the bad interception. He had to live with the terrible sack because he got really the icing on the cake with that second and 25 strike down the left sideline for a touchdown in overtime. But how long does Nick Saban live with those type of mistakes, even though Tua is the more exciting and talented passer? We'll have to wait and see.
All right, let's talk about the last team that actually did dethrone Alabama, Clemson. They also have a question at quarterback with Kelly Bryant and Touchdown Jesus, but they also then have three potential top 10 picks, as you mentioned, playing D-line. How much does their quarterback situation even matter when you have that talent up front, and who do you think wins that battle?
Well, here's another interesting aspect, because these battles are not what they have been in the past. Nick, remember, this year the eligibility rule changes, and players can play in four different football games and retain their red shirt. So if you're Dabo Swinney, why in the world would you name a starting quarterback? You can essentially allow the battle to happen throughout the entire month of September, then land on the starter and still retain a red shirt for a guy like Trevor Lawrence, if in fact you go with Kelly Bryant. So this is why we're seeing so many teams go into the season without naming a starting quarterback. It's because you can see it play out on the field. Now, in week two, they're going to have to go to College Station. They're going to have to play Texas A&M. I think leaving College Station, we're going to know everything we need to know about Clemson, in particular on that defensive side, and more in particular at the quarterback position. But I have a hunch that Trevor Lawrence will be the guy long term. I've seen him play. The guy's a phenomenal player, and a lot like Tua Tagovailoa for Alabama, this is the type of guy that gives him a little bit different dynamic throwing the football down the field.
Joe, let's move over to the Big Ten. You talked about Dwayne Haskins, some of his ability. Although Cordell, we saw that in 2014, them throwing the ball down the field. What about the distractions that the Buckeyes, Buckeye Nation right now, we don't know what's going to happen. Not a lot of words are coming out of Columbus. What's going to happen with Urban Meyer, a very, very good friend of mine. How do the Buckeyes handle that this year, Joel?
Well, I mean, we're going to find out today. Obviously, the Board of Trustees meet today, and they're going to essentially give their recommendations upon what's going to happen with the personnel there within the athletic department. But having said that, if you would, and this is what's so difficult about a situation like this, no matter how terrible the situation is, there's still the ability to analyze the football. And let's face it now, these kids tend to be more resilient than players in the NFL. And one of the reasons is because this is their sanctuary. This is where all of those distractions can kind of go away, is when they get into the building and when they get onto the field. You see, I was actually a part of a very similar occurrence back in 2003, 2004. Gary Barnett, my head coach, was suspended for a spring while they looked into allegations, a wide range of allegations at the University of Colorado. And I can tell you that because all of the things that were happening in the media were outside of football, that our team felt its most comfortable on the field. And I think that's where Ohio State's going to feel their most comfortable. This is one of the most talented teams in the country. I think that they're going to challenge for the Big Ten and the national title this year. And even with all of those distractions, because of those distractions are off the field, I think football can be a sanctuary for those kids.
All right, Joel, let's talk about Ohio State's arch rival, Michigan. Now that Jim Harbaugh has chosen his quarterback, Shea Patterson, we talked about this a little earlier on in the show. How much pressure is Harbaugh under now in year four?
I think he's under more media pressure than he is internal pressure at Michigan. The fact of the matter is that Michigan is in an exponentially better spot with Jim Harbaugh as their coach than when he was not their football coach. This is a program that has competed at the top end of the Big Ten. Even if they haven't won that division and ultimately a conference championship in those years, they were a punt, drop punt snap and a poor snap away from essentially being in the playoff maybe in a couple of those seasons. And that's with some pretty average quarterback play. You go into this season, this is going to be a top five defense in the country led by Don Brown, their defensive coordinator. He's got the most talented quarterback he's had at the college level since Andrew Luck and Shea Patterson, the transfer from Ole Miss. I fully expect Michigan to contend for a playoff spot this season. The narrative that this guy is underperforming at Michigan is media-driven, and it's false. Those that don't like him press this. Networks that don't like him press this. The fact of the matter is he's one of the six or seven best coaches in America. His record proves that out, and this year this is going to be a very good Wolverines team.
All right, Joel, before you leave, it was the last question, one of your pet peeves. Let's talk about playoff expansion. Barry Alvarez says we got to go to six. Now, it's not the eight I'd prefer, but it's a step in the right direction. What's your response to Barry?
That's terrible. It's a terrible idea, and I hope it never happens, quite frankly. And I fully expect everybody within the sport to argue for more entrants into the college football playoff because that means more money for those entrants. Listen, if we care about the sport, if we care about the regular season, if we want to maintain the relevance of regular season games, in particular in the non-conference or even in conference play, we need to keep this playoff at one less than there are power conferences. Listen, I could go on a dissertation about this. I've got a whole model that works out much better than your eight teams, but I will tell you this. College football has to keep this at four, or else we're going to ruin what is the most unique and most important regular season in all of sport. And anyone that argues otherwise is just, quite frankly, not looking.
The NFL preseason continues tonight on Fox. Number one draft pick Baker Mayfield and the Browns take on the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles. Pregame starts at 8 Eastern, live from New York with Terry, Howie, and Michael. Then on Sunday, the Bengals square off with the Bills. You can catch it all on Fox or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. All right, time for us to go viral. Marshawn Lynch has been living his best life since returning to the NFL last season, and now he has fulfilled a lifelong dream. Take a listen to this.
Look at that. Pack.
Mama, we did it.
This is huge, bro. My face is on this pack of Skittles. This is dope.
Who's having a better life than Marshawn Lynch?
He's so happy,
honestly,
man. I love this guy.
And I love the return of Marshawn Lynch because they didn't let him have too much fun. In Seattle. The relationship with the media and all that. See, I love. That's why all guys shouldn't do interviews. Just let them do themselves. I try to tell Roger Goodell and the people at the NFL office, man, just let them utilize their personality. Some of them don't have personality. He had one.
Right.
But that whole interview thing.
He has to be comfortable. If he feels like he's allowed to be himself, you will get a better, more honest version of an athlete than we get from almost anybody. But that's not coming in the setting of, both teams played hard. I'm here, so I just won't get fined.
Also, 75% of the fun things we've done on the show is thanks in part to Marshawn Lynch.
He's the best, man.
Man, a big kid.
People should know, if you're ever in Oakland and you see, just maybe driving through the hood, a red carpet and one of those velvet ropes in front of a Lamborghini, that's because when he's driving his Lamborghini in Oakland, when he parks it, he takes out a red carpet and a velvet rope and sets it there. I love this guy so much. He's the best.
All right, time now for some stories to start your morning. Thunder forward Jeremy Grant is tired of people saying that Russell Westbrook isn't a good teammate. He called that narrative ignorant. He said, Russ is a great teammate and a great person, and players obviously want to play with him. All right, Nick, what do you make of Grant's comments about Russ?
I absolutely love them, and I wish the media, sometimes the media is so arrogant that we just disregard what is a consensus amongst the guys who have played with Russ. Even Durant, through his burner account, said it was just KD and Russ. Like, who's the next teammate to say I hated playing with Russ will be the first. We know he's an inefficient player at times. We know sometimes he shoots the ball too much. But his teammates love him, and that has to matter.
We go to the pros because they can add a perspective that we don't know anything about. Russ, the guys that play with him, they enjoy playing with him. He plays as hard as you would ever want a human being to play the game. I could play with Russ.
And he's endlessly loyal, and his teammates appreciate that.
Just change his wardrobe just a little bit.
Moving on to the NFL, where one of the league's best defenses got even better. Vikings signed former Bengals safety George Iloka after Cincinnati cut him last week. Pro Football Focus ranked last year as Iloka's best season as he allowed just a 68.4 passer rating. All right, Chris Carter, what do you make of this signing by Minnesota?
This is one of Coach Zimmer's guys that he coached in Cincinnati. So you can bring a guy in. This defense, I think their secondary is ranked, coming to the season, the sixth best secondary in the NFL. He's another safety. Now they have three safeties. We know the All-Pro, Hitman Harrison, Santiago's a really quality safety, but Iloka is a better safety than him. They will play a three-safety nickel defense sometime compared to playing a nickel defense with three cornerbacks.
The key here is Mike Zimmer. I think he could have gotten a little. He's doing this for the minimum. I think the Houston Texans would have given him a couple million dollars. I think the Kansas City Chiefs were a little nervous about how Eric Berry's going to look coming off that Achilles. Mm-hmm. They have an injury to Daniel Sorensen, would have given him a couple million dollars. He wanted to get back with Mike Zimmer.
Yes.
And he wanted to be able to compete for a championship. This is going to be the most impactful late August addition any team makes. This is a really good player they got for nothing.
All right, Cardinals rookie quarterback Josh Rosen sat out of practice yesterday after banging his thumb on a helmet earlier in the week. It was the thumb on his throwing hand. The team is hopeful Rosen will play against the Cowboys on Sunday. See if Rosen can go. What do you want to see from the rookie in his third preseason game?
I want to see him continue to build on it. That's kind of been the theme for these other young quarterbacks in the third preseason game. They're going to probably see a few more exotic defenses. But also, I believe things like this for younger players, Nick, it will help them moving forward in their career.
That's what I was going to say, is that just like we said that Andrew Luck getting sacked by Suggs actually could have been a good thing because he dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, how many times in NFL seasons do you see a quarterback hit his thumb on a helmet? And it's not that he's got to play the next week. He got to play the next down. And so for Josh Rosen, he sat out practice, so he didn't have to do with it immediately. But he's going to be playing games at less than 100%.
Yes.
He's going to bang his hand on helmets. He's going to get sacked and have a sore elbow. And he's got to play through it. To be able to do it in a game that doesn't count as part of preseason, that's excellent experience.
Remember last year we saw Brady play with the lacerated hand.
Right.
All right, the Cowboys have announced that Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott won't be playing Arizona. Zeke hasn't played all preseason. Dak has played just four series in two games. But Jerry Jones noted the injuries to Zach Martin and Travis Frederick as reasons he doesn't want to put his two stars in harm's way. See, what do you make of the Cowboys' decision to sit Dak and Zeke?
Yeah, there are times during the preseason where you have to adjust to what's happened. And we play a collision sport. And when you've lost two of your valuable assets on the offensive line, Jerry is doing the right thing. Because it wouldn't be smart to put Dak in there with the offensive line with a couple replacements in there. We've seen Dak. He's played well enough. Now, yeah, what we'd like to see in going to his third year, for him to play the last two games, at least maybe a half or a half in the third game and a quarter in the fourth one. Yes, in a perfect situation. But we don't want that with replacements on the offensive line. Because if they start the season without their quarterback, okay, if you're a real Dallas Cowboy fan, tell me who their backup quarterback is.
I mean, I'll tell the audience.
I mean,
Cooper Rush.
I mean, it's that type of situation. He's not proven. If we talk about, man, their wide receivers, we're worried about them.
No,
you don't want to see no Cooper Rush in
no,
the game.
No, Cooper Rush, the Cooper Rush-Cole Beasley combo, it belongs in the CFL,
with
not the
bricks,
NFL.
Nick, the bricks.
And so like, that's the key here. Because in a perfect world, Dak is playing in the preseason. Because getting on the same page as Allen Hurns, getting on the same page as Michael Gallup, their third-round pick out of Colorado State, those would be valuable game reps, particularly in third preseason game. But Travis Frederick's dealing with a real health issue we learned about yesterday. Zach Martin's dealing with the knee, so they're not going to be there. That's Dak's side of things. Zeke's side of things is, Man, I would set the over-under at career carries in the preseason for Zeke moving forward at like 12. The rest of his career until he is, if he's ever coming off a major injury, something like that. Like, star running backs in this league, once they are star running backs, are used sparingly in the preseason. We seen Todd Gurley this preseason. No. What are your great Emmett Smith in the preseason memories? Not nothing. Like, I mean, these guys, you only have so many carries in your body at that position, and you don't need – this is the one position – I won't say you don't need to practice. I know that's practice is important. But Zeke doesn't need to play in extra games to be Ezekiel Elliott at that position.
Right, because the skills are so transferable. We always talk about, well, what position from college is the easiest to transfer over? It's running back because of their instincts and their natural runners with the football. Also, NFL fans should know that if I want Zeke and Dak to get some work where I can control it, we can scrimmage in practice.
Right.
I can have a 20-play scrimmage in practice, tell everybody, listen, we're just not taking the quarterback down, and we're not tackling the running back. So you can get a lot of work that NFL fans don't see that you can get by going against your number one defense. We talk about Dallas, how good their defense is going to be this year. You can create a great matchup in a rarefied atmosphere where you can control it in practice. We'll give them enough reps that Zeke's going to carry the ball at least 20 times week number one. And the reason why he'll be able to do that is the coaches will get him prepared there as we approach these last 2 weeks of the season where they will have ones-on-ones a lot in practice.
So you're not that concerned, not about Zeke, but about Dak not playing in the next
I'm not concerned because it's the right decision based on where the team is right now. You're going to see some other starters be pulled from that lineup also.
All right, moving on. After a two-week investigation, Ohio State has suspended Urban Meyer for the first three games of this season. The investigation found that the Buckeyes head coach mishandled domestic assault allegations made against his former assistant, Zach Smith. The university also deemed that Meyer misrepresented his knowledge of the situation during Big Ten Media Day back in July. The embattled OSU coach met the media last night. Take a listen.
I'm fully aware that I'm ultimately responsible for the situation that has harmed the university as a whole and our Department of Athletics and our football program. I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation. I followed my heart, not my head. I fell short in pursuing full information because at each juncture, I gave Zach Smith the benefit of the doubt. As I reflect my loyalty to his grandfather, Earl Bruce, who was my mentor and like a father to me, likely impacted how I treated Zach over the years. I did not know everything about Zach Smith, which was what Zach Smith was doing, and I'm pleased that the report made this very clear. I did a poor job at Media Day. It's a big reason why we're here today. I was not being as complete and as accurate as I should have been at Media Day and afterward. But there is no intent to mislead. My role is to set a good example. In this instant, I did not live up to the university's standards.
So the university released the following statement. Although neither Urban Meyer nor Gene Smith condoned or covered up the alleged domestic abuse by Zach Smith, they failed to take sufficient management action relating to Zach Smith's misconduct and retained an assistant coach who was not performing as an appropriate role model for OSU student athletes. Permitting such misconduct to continue is not consistent with the values of the university and reflects poorly on Coach Meyer, Athletic Director Smith, and the university. All right, Chris, let me start with you. What was your reaction to all of this?
Well, God knows I love my university. And for those who don't know, Urban Meyer is a very, very dear friend of mine. Him and I are very, very close. I've been knowing his wife for over 30 years, basically. Urban coached me at Ohio State. Urban, first job. He's a Buckeye. He was born in Ohio. His first job was to coach the wide receivers. That was my junior year. That was the year I was first team All-American. The first wide receiver to ever be an All-American in Ohio State. And the story is not about me. The story is to give context to my relationship with that university and with that man. I was disappointed. I was disappointed in the university, and I was disappointed in Urban. I was disappointed that as someone, as a department head, for you not to know the people who you are employing. And, you know, they fooled me because I have had Zach coach a few of the kids who I coached there. And some of those kids felt like that Zach wasn't the quality of the coaches of the other, Larry Johnson Sr., people like Mike Vrabel, who have coached at that great university. That's one of the great things. They talk about Urban, but, man, we've always had a line of great assistant coaches. So on many different levels was I disappointed, because Urban should have known that. That's his responsibility. But just like all of us, Urban's human. We have blind spots. And he allowed, because of his mentor, Earl Bruce, who also recruited me since I was 16 years old, and he was my coach at Ohio State. So I understand what Urban's saying about his grandson and how Urban was mentored by Earl Bruce. Yeah, I can see all that. But this is not a mistake that Urban Meyer typically makes. Urban Meyer is typically always buttoned up on all these situations. So to me, it was a message to me that even the people who we think we know, we need to continue to take inventory in this 2018. Because what happened in 2015, 2009, 12, we're living a different era as far as sexual harassment, domestic violence, all those things. Man, we have to continue to check our circle to make sure that we know the people who are around us. And the last point I'm going to make is all those disgusting things that people reported that Zach Smith did at the White House, I was at the White House. Like, this guy is like, I was there. I was there with the team, taking pictures with the president. Urban called me on stage. Myself and Archie Griffin, the only two-time Heisman Trophy winner. So, man, there's a lot of different levels of this of disappointment. I thought the university should suspend him for 5 games because I thought he should lose at least 1 or 2 Big Ten games. We play Rutgers week 2. But, no, he should probably miss that Penn State game, which would take the suspension potentially to 5 games. I think that would have been penal. I don't think that he should have lost his job. But I am disappointed in my friend. He's still my friend, though, because for him not to know a person like that, I could see he had a blind spot because he was the grandson of someone who was a mentor to him.
And I understand the relationship of you want to take care of your mentor's grandson. The question I had in this situation is, what about your mentor's great-grandchildren? Because those little kids saw their mom getting beat up, allegedly, I'm supposed to say here. And Urban heard that this something like this had happened in 2009, reportedly. And I'm big on second chances. You can argue in domestic violence should be no second chances, but I'm big on second chances. Isolated instance, this is not who I am. When you hear it again in 2015, that's then a repeated pattern of behavior. There's now children involved. And that's where the enormous lapse in judgment that I would argue continued every day from 2015 until Zach was fired. Continue. At Ohio State's practice complex, see, you've been there. They got something written on the wall. It says, honesty, treat women with respect, no drugs, no stealing, no weapons. Well, the no drugs, no stealing, no weapons, that seems to still apply. The honesty, Urban had a major misstep with the media. But that treat women with respect, to me, that program has to earn that back. And I when this story first came out, I said this, I want to say it again. This is another reminder on a big picture scale that when it comes to domestic violence, almost always, men have the power. And I don't just mean the alleged assaulter. I mean typically the people in positions of power around that person are men. And if any of those powerful men had stepped in at one point in time, maybe this woman's in better shape, maybe her children are in better shape, maybe everyone is in better shape. And you're right, it's 2018 and we have a better understanding of it now, but it's so troubling for me that a lot of us have this blind spot,
right,
where we wouldn't accept open racism from our friends, but a little misogyny, a little sexism, like those things, to me, a lot of us have blind spots on. As far as the punishment goes, I didn't think he'd get fired. Whether he should be fired or not, I didn't think he would be fired. I agree with C. If he would have been more penal to miss a big game in Penn State, but that's to me not the bigger story here. It's about Zach Smith his ex-wife and the children.
No, and I echo what both of you guys are saying. I also would have liked to have seen a little more of a heartfelt apology as opposed to just reading from a prepared statement with what felt like very little heart and very little remorse. But again, he was blessed with another chance to come back, to have just three games missed, right. So, all right, much more on this. We'll have much more on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Look who it is, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty. Hey, Chris, haven't seen you in a while. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Summer winding down, things are good?
Summer winding down, things are not good because my Yankees took an L down in Miami, lost to one of the worst teams in baseball, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Got an off day, hopefully they regroup, we bounce back in Baltimore.
None of it matters, man. It's coming down to one game. You got one game for the wild card? Yeah,
you got one game behind the camera, you lose.
I held out hope that maybe they could catch
the Reds.
Maybe.
Yeah, right.
Maybe.
Okay. Hey, if you're a kid these days and you've got the most coveted toy in your possession and you're not going to play with it like that Nintendo power pad that Chris Canty used to have, why not see if any of your friends would maybe trade you something for it? That's where the Oakland Raiders sit with all-pro defensive end Khalil Mack. The Raiders don't seem to want to keep him. At least a dozen teams have reportedly reached out to the Raiders multiple times, the most recent being the Jets. So, Canty, I ask you, should the Jets deal for a Nintendo Power Pad and Khalil Mack?
100%, Jenna. This is one of those no-brainer situations. If Khalil Mack is available, Mike Maccagnan has to make the deal. When I had a chance to talk to Mike Mack during the preseason, one of the things I asked him was about his defense and specifically about his pressure players because they don't have a lot of guys that can win one-on-one on the edge on their roster. And he didn't rule out the possibility that they could potentially look to trade before the regular season to bring back one of those pieces. He volunteered that information, but now after the news earlier this week about them being interested in Dante Fowler Jr. and then the Khalil Mack report surfacing, it's starting to look like the Jets are trying to get that one missing piece from their defense. If you look at all three levels of their defense, the edge pressure player is the only thing that's missing right now.
Well, let me ask you this. This is what would you do, and then also given your relationship with Maccagnan, what do you think he would do? The Jets are not going to be good this year with or without Khalil Mack. They're going to be drafting in the top 10 again, I would imagine. Would you trade a first-round pick, which could be not only top 10, maybe top 5 for Khalil Mack, and do you think the Jets would do it?
Absolutely, because when you look at what the Jets need, they're going to have the defense be the identity of this team. That's where they have most of their draft capital. And I get that you traded up to draft Sam Darnold. And this year, by and large, is about the development of Sam Darnold. But what's going to help a young quarterback? Being able to have a defense that can create extra possessions and field position so he can take advantage of those opportunities. So that's why I look at it. It's going to be a first round plus, whatever the compensation
because
is.
Because the Jets already don't have a 2019 second rounder. Because they traded up. That's the key here, or part of it at least, is they've already traded. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I just want the audience to remember. They were drafting sixth. They traded 6 and 3 second rounders, 2 this year and 1 next year, in order to be able to move up to 3. So if you trade for Mack, you're not drafted in the first 65 picks next year. That's what the Jets would be looking at.
But if you're looking at using a draft pick, you're probably going to think about in the first round a pressure player or a wide receiver, somebody to help Sam Darnold, because you don't have a whole lot of holes on that roster outside of those 2 or 3 respective positions. Offensive line can use an upgrade as well. So
yeah, if you're concerned about the draft pick being too high, well, then let me tell you who you'd be drafting. You're going to be drafting either one of the 4 kids from Clemson, either Nicky Bowles at Ohio State, our big man Oliver,
Ed Oliver from Houston.
University of Houston. Now, would you rather have them or Khalil Mack, who also, happens to be from the University of Buffalo, which happens to be in New York. So you get the premier rusher, one of the premier rusher, compared to a hope and a prayer. Because out of all those players I mentioned, that's 6 defensive ends, defensive tackles and ends, I can guarantee you 4 of them will not reach their potential. So you're rolling the dice. So that draft pick, man, you can have that draft pick because I'm trying to find a Khalil Mack. So the Jets, with their salary cap room, make an investment in your quarterback, all right, who is your future. Make an investment in your head coach. He did a remarkable job with those pieces that he's got. Man, give him a pass rush. He's a defensive specialist. As a coach, give him one of the premier pass rushers. I believe this is a no-brainer for the Jets. to bring in one of the premier rushers to put him in that, to put him on the perimeter to be able to play in front of that home crowd where he is from this state playing. I believe that you're not going to get that type of value of any player. And there's some good players in this year's draft better than Khalil Mack.
No, you make a very good point. But is there something to be said for putting your trust in the general manager that he drafted, he moved up to get Sam Darnold, let him really build this young team? You're not going to be great for the next couple of years. You're going to have an opportunity to maybe put together a lot of young guys that are going to be high in the draft and grow everybody at the same time.
Well, here's the thing, Jenna, and that's a valid concern, the culture that's in the building. But if you look at what Mike McCagnan and Todd Bowles have done together over the course of the last couple of off seasons, they've moved on from some veteran guys in that locker room that necessarily weren't on board with mm-hmm. what Todd Bowles wanted to do.
Yes.
They had to clean up the locker room chemistry. There were some issues going on after that Brandon Marshall, Mo Wilkerson, Darrell Revis era of Jets football. So I think that he's done a good job of being able to do that. Now you just have to infuse the roster with talent. But the one thing that I will say, there's got to be some winning to support all of the slogans and the mantras that Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan have been selling those guys. I mean, it's one thing to preach it during the offseason and during the preseason, but if you're going out there in the regular season and what the Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan told you isn't working, you're not having success in the way of winning, then it's going to be a problem. So I think you've got to be able to go out there and get somebody like a Khalil Mack that can be a difference maker for this team.
Yeah, I support you. And there's no team, there's no franchise in any of the four major sports that can win a championship with all young players. It's nice to say, hey, we're going to groom all these players together. But you can't have that. You have to have different levels of productivity. And you have to have different levels of experience in the league. Because if not, everyone's not going to gel together. You need some veteran players that are established, like Khalil Mack, to bring some stability and leadership to that organization and locker room.
And Mack is the perfect type of veteran, given your concerns, because he's 27 years old. He's entering year five. If he were a 31-year-old pass rusher, then
yes.
I might be. Then I would think I would be more concerned about it. And to be fair, so the audience knows, I was presenting the argument against it because mm-hmm. I thought everyone at the table was going to be for it. I also think you can get Khalil Mack. You can get Khalil Mack. Like, the NFL GMs sometimes don't do this math. I don't want to trade this draft pick. What's the best case scenario for your draft pick? Like you said,
he's half as good as Khalil Mack.
Your best case scenario is one day he becomes a defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Well, this guy already is. And the salary cap room that you mentioned is key here. There are some teams that might say, you know what? I'd rather draft a guy who could turn into him, who for the next 4 or 5 years I have on a very depressed salary, than pay a guy top of the market. But the Jets have so much cap space going into next mm-hmm. year. They even could do a contract where they give him an enormous bonus up front, so by the time they are paying Sam Darnold, his cap hit isn't so onerous. That's one of the issues going on with the Rams and Aaron Donald right now. They don't have a ton of cap space right now. Mm-hmm. They also know we're going to have to eventually pay Jared Goff. We don't want Donald's money to balloon at the same time we're having to pay Jared Goff. Like, the Jets have a lot of weaknesses. We focus on their wide receiving core, most noteworthy. Pro Football Focus says the biggest weakness of their team is not defense, but pass rush. Pretty good run defense,
yes,
but no pressure on the quarterback. In my eyes, he's the best player in the league at getting pressure on the quarterback. Mm. If you can get him, I think that's a no-brainer for this football team.
Raiders fans, frustrated. Oh, big yeah. frustrated.
Bottom line, you're not going to be a good defense unless you can get to the quarterback.
It's true. All right, got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, big missing piece for the Giants. Details next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Canty, your former team, the New York Giants, were happy to get Saquon Barkley back in practice. He's been out 10 days after a tweak in his hamstring. While the rookie said he felt good, head coach Pat Shurmur was noncommittal when it came to clearing Saquon for week one. And Eli Manning made it a point of saying that Barkley missed valuable time with his absence. Chris, how big of a deal is Saquon missing most of the preseason?
To me, it's got to be a big deal. I mean, because you drafted Saquon Barkley with the expectation that he was going to help Eli Manning in this offense compete for a championship over the course of the next two seasons. That's how long the Giants have Eli Manning under contract. If that wasn't the intention, if that's not the expectation, then they probably would have went ahead and drafted one of those young quarterbacks like you saw the crosstown Jets do. But the fact that they have Saquon Barkley and he's only played in one preseason game and he's probably not going to play the rest of the preseason, I'm a little bit concerned, just because it's a lot to ask a young running back to come in without playing the majority of the preseason and have to get 15 to 20 touches going against one of the best defenses in the NFL in the Jacksonville Jaguars in week one.
Yeah, and also let's look at OBJ. People forget that he struggled with a hamstring, problematic early part of his career, especially that first year, getting through training camp and those first couple of games. But you don't get better at pro football unless you're practicing pro football. And what Eli is not trying to be critical of him, but he's saying in the last 2 weeks of training camp, we talked about before, those simulated scrimmages you can have in practice with the Dallas Cowboys with Zeke and Dak not playing. When you're not picking up blitz protection, when you don't feel guys how big they are, how strong they are, now he's just adapting, which he would have done the first 2 weeks of the preseason. He's going to be adapting the month of September. Live bullets, games can be won and lost with his decision-making. So Eli is right, and Eli is the one that can receive those mistakes. If he doesn't know the blitz protection, if he gets knocked back, if he's limited, he can only play one or two downs because of his lack of experience. It affects this Giants offense. When you were putting the type of responsibility on this rookie, you would have loved to have seen him play in three or four games behind this very suspect offensive line, especially on the right-hand side.
Obviously, it's not ideal, but if you're telling me a guy that's a top 10 pick that we need to be an instant contributor is going to miss the vast majority of preseason games, three of the four, he had that awesome, feels like he had that first play of his NFL career in the preseason, and nothing since then. He hurt his hamstring in practice on a fly, on a long pass catch, and he's going to be able to practice, by the way, but if you're going to tell me you're going to miss one of these guys, the position I hope it is running back. Like, the guy that I'm least concerned about, even if it's not ideal, is this position. And a guy that level of talent at running back as well. I mean, tell me if you guys think I'm wrong. Like, some of the blitz pickup stuff, some of the things he has to learn classroom-wise, he can still do that with live practice and in the meeting room rather than in the preseason.
It is not the same. It is not the same getting on a whiteboard. We're going to draw this up compared to an NFL linebacker in the type of intensity that he's going to bring in those types of settings. So, no, this is not transferable. And he hadn't seen this. The running back thing that we say is transferable is everything they've seen since they were 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So they adjust to that. The blitz pickup and the passing game are the hardest parts. And the reason why I can't agree with you is if this was Ezekiel Elliott, if this was a guy who was a workhorse in college, so what happens week number one? We get the game. We're up by 4 points late in the game. He's got 15 touches. Can he take another 10 touches?
They're going to need him to.
Yeah.
But would you learn that in preseason? Because in preseason, they're not going to have him do that.
He's been in his first NFL game, Nick. He has seen the wear and tear. We could see it. We can feel it. You know how many running backs they're going to dress on game day? Three. At Penn State, you know how many running backs they got dressed?
Seven.
10. I mean, it's just a total different game, and you need those reps to be able to adjust. It's fairly shocking, your first NFL game, and you realize it's 48 of us in uniforms? Wow, where'd the team go? We're used to in college dressing 120 at home, 60 on the road. Like, it's a big adjustment when you look around and see, man, there ain't no backups. Like, so those things that become the preseason can never be removed from the NFL if they want the product not to suffer severely. We have seen even with the practices, not the lack of two-a-days, the product already suffers early. And we will see a young player who didn't participate, he will also suffer, Chris.
CeCe, is it fair to say that he's missed the majority of the preseason in terms of actually playing in games, that he's probably not going to be at his best in week one of the NFL season?
It's impossible to say, because even if he's great in week number one, how much better would he have been with some reps?
My point exactly. I'm just saying, with everything that this Giants team is trying to do this season, Saquon Barkley is going to be a huge piece of that.
Oh,
not just
totally
with the
agree.
Offense. The team's formula for success centers on Saquon Barkley being a running back that's capable of producing 1,500-plus yards from scrimmage, 12-plus touchdowns. If they don't get out to the kind of start that they need to, because Saquon Barkley is taking a little bit of time to adjust and get acclimated to regular season football because he didn't have a lot of preseason, that could put the Giants in a big spot. I mean, that could put them in a tough spot.
But we have to assume there's going to be a little bit of that getting adjusted or acclimating to the NFL regardless. I think we have an idea just because of the guys we've seen the last couple of years, the Leonard Fournettes, Todd Gurley, Zeke. They came out and had fantastic rookie years. That can't be the norm with running backs.
No.
I mean, if we think that's what Saquon Barkley is going to do.
He's the number two overall pick.
You think
he has to be?
Yes, absolutely. It has to be that. You don't draft a number two. He's the highest drafted running back since Kajana Carter. He was drafted higher than Zeke, than Gurley, than Fournette. And Zeke, by the way, with a full preseason, should be noted, his only bad game of his rookie year was his first game. His first game of the rookie year, I think he had like 30 yards. Top of my head, I'm going to say that. And then he was a monster moving forward. The Cowboys, by the way, lost that game. It was Zeke and Dak's first game. And then they went on from there and went 13-2 the rest of the way.
Do you remember, I don't know if it was week number two or three in the Cowboys' rookie season there that you talked about with Zeke, that he went to Seattle. Mm-hmm. Not the part about him going to the dispensary during the daytime, but at night when they played the game. Him and Cam Chancellor, remember, they ran into each other deliberately. Mm-hmm. The confidence that Zeke left that game with and the message that he sent to the league, it was fairly man, if you're going to run into Cam Chancellor, this guy right here must be serious. So Zeke was able to get that bounce of confidence going into week number one, which still didn't lead to a great game. I'm sure in talking to OBJ, if he could take something back from his rookie year, he would change the beginning. He would wish he was at training camp practicing more and not having that hamstring hinder his beginning.
Listen, what you say that I fully agree with is the every path to the Giants being a 10-win team or competing for the playoffs involves Saquon Barkley being a monster.
Yep.
Every single one involves, forget offensive rookie of the year, we're talking offensive player of the year in the discussion. There is no way for the Giants to be really good without this guy being great. I feel like the 18 touches that he would have gotten in week three of the preseason isn't going to flip that one way or the other. Now, the first week against Jacksonville, that's not the ideal opponent to be going up against. I understand that.
I guess my whole point is, Nick, they can't afford to get out to a slow start. They got the Jacksonville Jaguars week one, then they're on the road against
Dallas,
the Cowboys, the Texans, and then back home for the New Orleans Saints. If the Giants are trying to compete for a championship this year, you look at that schedule and say, if Saquon Barkley's not at 100% week one, their season could be over before it even gets started.
Nick, I know you've driven your car fast because I've been in the car when you drive fast and fairly reckless.
Okay.
You ever been on the Autobahn?
What? No.
Oh, I have. I've driven them. Jenna, you have?
Yes, I have.
There's nothing that will prepare you for that. And that's what week number one against the Jacksonville Jaguar is going to be like. So I don't know where he's driving now. Don't know what speed he's going. But what he's going to see the first week, there is nothing. There is no Penn State football that gets you ready for week number one, let alone one of the top five defenses we're going to see in the Jacksonville Jaguar.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.